Welcome to the Children's Book Author Podcast. I'm your host, Eleanor Page. If you write for children, or it's always been your dream to, you're in the right place. As the Children's Book Author, I'm on a quest to discover everything there is about writing, publishing, and marketing children's books, as well as how to supercharge my creativity, skyrocket my productivity, and absolutely everything else there is to know about how to be the best, so you can be too. Join me as I interview fabulous guests and become the children's book author. Welcome back to the Children's Book Author Podcast for 2024. And there are some exciting interviews that I have in store for you this year. Yes, the podcast is still alive and running. You may be looking for new episodes, and it is now April as I'm recording this intro. I've been deep in the trenches of writing a novel, which has taken a huge amount of my energy and focus. And also, I've been painting a lot. I started a new side business, painting on canvas, and it's been keeping me really, really busy. So balancing all of that and, of course, making time to bring you new episodes of the podcast. And today's episode is with Essie Bell, who writes rhyming picture books. So we're going to talk all about rhyming and are they still relevant? Are we allowed to write rhyming picture books? There's a bit of conflicting information out there. And at the end of the day, we come to the conclusion that yes, you can still write rhyming picture books and be successful doing it. I ask Essie all about this in today's episode. So I'm wondering, what have you been up to? Where have your efforts been going in your author career of late? Have you been strategizing, planning? Have you, like me, been in the trenches of creating? Where has your attention gone? And after last year, I finished the year and thought, oh my goodness, I haven't actually written anything and finished it this entire year. And I had to take a really honest moment of sitting myself down and saying, what exactly did I do this year? I mean, I'm sure I did a lot of things, but it's like I couldn't think. Like, what was I doing? Where did the year go? If you had told me that it was like 2020 lockdown year and I had a good excuse, I would have been like, yeah, that makes sense. But I didn't really. And I wondered, you know, we hear this advice a lot in the world to work on your business, not just in your business. But I feel as though I kind of overdid that. I worked too much on my business and not enough in my business. And so this year, I'm trying to balance that out a bit better and really getting back to craft, to working on my craft. And the only way to really work on your craft is to do it. At the end of last year, one of the things that did take a fair chunk of my time and also the beginning of this year was I began painting on canvas and selling those paintings. So essentially setting up a brand new business. And it took a lot of time and energy to do that because it's new. But one of the things about painting is that it teaches me so much about writing, because with writing, it's harder to see some of the creativity lessons, whereas in painting, it's really right in your face. That's how it feels to me. When I'm painting, it's like I have an outcome in my mind, and if I have that outcome, it never, ever matches what I end up creating. In other words, I want to create one certain thing, but each step of the way, it's like my intuition and my logic come together and lead me somewhere completely different. And in the end, something completely different turns up to what I had in mind. And I know that when I'm in it, but if I'm planning it, it's a lot harder to fulfill. Now, that just might be me. It might not be everybody, but I'm starting to apply that back into my craft. that I've spent a lot of time following, you know, the advice of different creatives that came before me who, you know, speak very much about journaling and getting in touch with yourself that way, reading other people's things to get in touch with yourself that way. But actually, the only way to really get in touch with your own craft and to get better is to do it. And this is key, leave a bit of space in between when you go back and read it again, or when I go back into my art again after I've been painting on that canvas, something says that's enough. When I come back to it, it's like, oh, I'm supposed to use orange next. Who knew? I wasn't going to do that at the end of the last session. I was going to use pink. It's the same with writing. Oh, okay. So I didn't have to worry about where that character was going. I just needed to give that just a tiny bit of space. And when I came back to it, that character knows exactly where they're going or what they're doing. If I'm not sure if the plot's right, well, time away. And then something in me says, I know I'm supposed to do it this way, even though my brain wants to do it that way. So that time apart, the time away, and then coming back into the craft and not necessarily analyzing the craft while you're in it has been really key for me. And less journaling, don't know if I'm allowed to say that, less journaling. As a counselor of 20 years, I am very adept at understanding trauma and healing. And I think creative people are incredibly sensitive people. And I don't say that in a negative way. I think that's a beautiful form of sensitivity that allows us to tune in and be the creatives that we are. Journaling is one technique to help with that sensitivity and that trauma. And that trauma can just be like, the world is a bit much for me, you know, or the, you know, what happened last week in that confrontation with a lady at the supermarket, you know, is still in my consciousness. It doesn't have to be something massive. But what I've been finding really useful for myself this year is to release that trauma. Another way to think of it is that rather than releasing trauma, perhaps we're just releasing high cortisol levels, that fight or flight, that state that our nervous system is often in. And for me, when I go to write, I think I get a lot of cortisol because I'm like, this matters and I'm going to stuff it up. So I journal. But what I found is that after I journal, I become quite drained and then I don't necessarily want to write. So what I've been doing is a lot more body-focused exercises and they're really simple, like just, you know, one, for example, is to stretch one arm and lie on it on your side and then use your other arm to rock you sort of back and forth 60 times and then turn over and do it on the other side. Like really, really simple, doesn't involve my mind and allows me to come into that state of peace and balance and then work on my craft and put my thoughts, feelings, emotions into my writing rather than into my extraordinary journal, which I reckon my journal could win a Pulitzer Prize. It's so good, but no one's ever going to read it. And I could have been writing fiction with those words. That's my what I've been going through in the last few months, and I'm sharing it with you in case it also helps you in some small or perhaps big way. I recently pulled this quote from a book and that I read somewhere, and it's a funny sort of quote because it does sound very negative, I guess, but I liked it. So I put it on a sticky note and I'm going to leave you with it. And, you know, you can make of it what you will, whether it's talking about you in relation to other people, whether it's talking about you in relation to yourself. It really spoke to me. I kind of liked it, lit me up, which, you know, you're going to make assumptions about me based on it. But hey, again, that's what makes life interesting. So here it is. You will assume a more aggressive role in life and bring your competition to their knees, as well as remove people who have been working behind the scenes against you. So yeah, take it as you will. Use it as comedy, use it as motivation, use it as just an interesting piece of information. And as always, enjoy today's interview. Welcome back to the Children's Book Author Podcast with me, your host. I'm going to say Elena Page today because I have an American guest and I love that pronunciation. I think it's so cute. And today I am joined by an amazing picture book author, Shannon Bell, but writes under the name Essie Bell. So, you know, I might call her Shannon half the time and Essie half the time just because they're such beautiful names. Welcome to the show, Shannon. Let's go with Shannon.
Perfect. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You write picture books, and I'm definitely going to ask you all about how you write them because they are a little bit of a mystery to me. Now, there are, of course, lots of listeners who will also be writing them, but I want to sort of get into the nitty-gritty in particular of how you write rhyming picture books because that is really tricky. But before we go there, Shannon, tell me and the audience a little bit about yourself as a person and how you ended up in this crazy author world.
Oh, that is a lot to dig into, she said, Shannon. But my pen name is Essie. When I started thinking of writing books, I Google searched other authors with the name Shannon Bell. There's another one who wrote more adult type books, not very kid friendly. And so I didn't want to get confused with that Shannon Bell. So I came up with my pen name, Essie. And I just put my two initials together. So my name is Shannon Elise. So S and E together came up with Essie. And I figured it was easy for kids to pronounce and read and wasn't too complicated. So it worked. So I just turned my initials into a name and that's how I got my pen name. So I'm a mom of three. I have two boys and a little girl. And yeah, I've always enjoyed writing. I never really thought I'd become a writer or an author. When I was younger, I, you know, tried my hand at some books, but I just like stories. I always tried like chapter books, beginning reading chapter books, you know, like Junie B. Jones type age group. But it just, the stories didn't come to me. They didn't flow. So I never really thought much of it. And then when I started having kids, I was reading a lot of picture books, a lot of, you know, different children's books to my kids. And there's some great ones out there and there's some not as great ones out there. And stories started flowing in my head, you know, just because I was reading so many. And so the first book I ever wrote, I was carrying my daughter in her room at night, trying to get her to sleep and just walking circles. And it just kind of started coming. And so I sat down in the rocking chair and started typing it out on my phone. And then since then, just more and more stories have come to me. So I've continued writing and publishing them as they come.
I love what you said about your pen name, which is really cool that you, the way you created that. And to be honest, to me, Shannon Bell and Essie Bell both sound like such sort of famous author names. So, you know, whoever's got Shannon Bell, well done. That sounds like a great author name. But Essie Bell sounds great too. And it's so, it feels so child friendly. Like, you know, talking about branding, when I see the name Essie Bell, my brain instantly thinks that's a children's book author, which is a weird assumption, but that's what I think.
Well, good.
Yeah, so well done, nailed it. And in terms of, it's so fascinating to me that you said you started or tried to write the chapter books, but they weren't necessarily flowing. And, you know, I wonder if that's because, I'm going to say American pronunciation, see if I pull it off, because you're a mom. How did I do that? You're a mom. You're sort of almost writing as your kids, at your kids' level. And I curiously wonder, let's see, because, you know, this interview is going to be evergreen. If in another, I don't know, let's say 5 years, those chapter books start flowing through because your kids are at that age and they'll want to read those sort of books, and they're like amazing critique partners.
That is true. They don't hold back. They tell the truth, those kids.
Yeah, so do you find when you're writing your books that you kind of write it and think, perfect, in one take, or do you ask them for their opinions and they tell you what they like or don't like?
Both. Some of the books have just, they've just flown and it's super easy, and other times it takes a little more effort and revising and, okay, do you guys like this or not? Or, you know, so it's both.
If
you written so far? Tell me a little bit about what you've got on your publishing shelf.
My first book, I actually have a copy right here. This one is Possibilities of You. And this is the one I wrote when I was holding my daughter. So, of course, it's like a mom and a daughter together because, you know, that's how it was. And so it goes through just a day with a mom and a daughter of them, like, playing with toys. So you can see, like, the daughter has her horse. And then when she grows up, it's from the mom's point of view, envisioning what she can be. So she grows up, she can become a jockey. And so there's lots of different ones in there. She gives her mom flowers. So when she grows up, she's a florist. And then at the end of the book is kind of my favorite part of just the mom, like, realizing that she's her daughter now and she's going to grow up, but we don't need to rush that. That for here and now, like, it's just let her be a kid and enjoy the moment as a kid. So that was my first one that I wrote. It wasn't the first one I actually published, though. I went with my Penguin book. I like a lot because it was my first one.
Who doesn't like penguins? That's a winner.
One of my favorite animals. So this one actually came to me when I was driving one day. My kids had fallen asleep in the back seat and I didn't want to wake them up. So I just kind of kept driving and it was quiet. And so the story came to me. And it's all about this cute little penguin named Paul and how he loves living on land and sliding in the snow and playing in the snow and the ice. And then his friends tell him, hey, you've got to learn to swim. And he is scared. He does not want to learn to swim. There's a cute picture of him looking all nervous here, just not sure that's what he wants to do. And just like how he overcomes his fear. And so that's fun for any kids that just are trying something new or trying to learn to swim. My kids don't like going under the water. So this is like a perfect book for their age right now because to swim, you go under the water. So it's good to just see like how he tries something new and he, you know, spoiler, enjoys it and likes it. So then I have four other books and these ones are actually like a set and my illustrator did such a good job. I didn't illustrate any of these. I wish I could, but I am not talented. So the first one I did in this one is the winter one. So it just goes through four different families living in four different areas through the four seasons. And so, you know, just activities that you can do with your kids. I'm like a little too close here. With your kids each day. So having a snowball fight or building an igloo, making snow angels, things you can do in the season. So this one follows the mom and her son, and they have a little dog that shows up in most pictures, which I found kids have loved, something to look for on like every page. So once we did this book and there's a dog, then all the others followed with an animal too. So the next one is the spring one. And this one, I have a sister who actually is adopted from Haiti and is deaf. And so she's black and has a cochlear implant. And so it's like, I've got to put you in a book. And she loves it. Anytime she sees this book or, you know, she tells people that that's her. So this one follows a dad and the daughter, you know, looking at flowers that are blooming or playing in the rain. And they have a little turtle that comes along and plays throughout the book with them too. So reading books together and such fun. And then this one is all about summer, which is what we're coming up to here. And so it's kind of taking off right now because
I'm jealous.
Everyone's getting ready for summer, but it's got a parrot. And so this one follows a mom and her two twin daughters. One's in a wheelchair. My sister-in-law was actually in a wheelchair her whole life. Hey, let's put you in a book. And I had a sister and a cousin adopted from Guatemala. And so we got the Hispanic in there for my other sister, wanted to show her in a book. So it's kind of where I get a lot of inspiration for my characters is from people in my life. But this follows them. They live out more in the country by a lakeside. So they go and spend the day at a lake throwing rocks in and canoeing. And at the end, they have a campfire and camp out. So it's a fun summer book. And then the very last one that I did, this one just came out last fall, is winter. Or no, goodness, autumn. This one's all about autumn. And so the dad and his son, and they, of course, have a chicken. They live on a farm. And so it's all the things you can kind of do on a farm. Digging up potatoes and carrots, and we have going through a corn maze. And here's the chicken coming along for the corn maze. And this cute little boy has a prosthetic hand, too. just because with my recreational therapy background, you know, I work with a lot of people with different disabilities. And so besides knowing people with them, I also wanted to include them in my books. I've worked with a lot. So, you know, making pumpkin cookies and things. So those are my 6 books that I have.
Wow, you've been busy. And I have down here, I did write down that you did 6 books in 18 months with 3 kids under 5.
Yes. All of my writing happens after they go to bedtime for the most part. Once in a while, I'll plug in during the day and, hey, Dad, you got to take the kids for a minute. But usually I do it in the evening.
Yeah, yeah, enjoy that while your children are young, because I used to do that too. And now my kids are teenagers.
They don't go to bed as early.
Yeah, what are we watching tonight? And I'm like, okay, Netflix is taking all my creativity away from me.
Right.
So, yeah, it's funny how it flips. But let's go back a little bit. Well, first of all, I heard you say in there, because I'm a keen listener, that you didn't illustrate the books because you're not talented. That's not true. Essie, because Essie wrote the books. I'm talking to Essie now. That's just that you haven't tried drawing, right? And, of course, you want to get these books out in earlier than 5 years' time, and it might take you 5 years to learn.
I started taking an illustration class, and I, you know, got probably halfway through. It just went online, like, do it your own pace, and it was like, it is going to take me so long to get to the point that I could actually, like, do this professionally. So I was like, I'm not going to wait that long. I'll hire someone.
yeah, which is great, but it needs to be said, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that will be like, would never illustrate. It's interesting, and I'm diverting, as I have a tendency to do. There are, you know, a few interviews I've done now, and I love hearing alternate opinions. It's one of my favorite things, and what I love to bring to my audience, like, that there is not just one point of view. I refuse to give one point of view. I love all different points of view. And one of the authors I interviewed said, keep at it, do a little bit every day, and in like about 5 years' time, you'll be great as an illustrator. And made me go, maybe I could. And then another person I interviewed, I'm not going to tell you who, so you can go back and see who they are, said, it's very rare to be a good writer and a good illustrator. So pick one or the other. And I think, which one do we do, right? So as a business person, you've gone and published these books now. You look relatively young. So, you know, in another 50 years of writing and publishing books, if you were to stick in this career for that long, who's to say that you couldn't one day draw your own books and write your own books? I mean, you know, I think we need to kind of think of it long-term like that. So a diverted conversation. Having said all that, your illustrations are spectacular. So let's begin there. How did you find an illustrator? Like, how did you find working with an illustrator? And what's that process been like?
Yeah, so I had 2 different illustrators. My first 2 books were one, and then the second, or the last 4, were all another illustrator. And I found them online. So one is from Russia and one's from Pakistan, and I've never met either one. But I just kind of put a job posting out there. Hey, I need an illustrator. Here's kind of the synopsis of the book. This is after the book had been written. And then I had just people apply and send me their portfolios. And I went through and, you know, hey, I like your work. I like your work. And found the ones that I wanted to work with. Asked them a few questions, if they'd done books before, if they could do a cover for me. And, you know, and then found them. And I lucked out. I had great illustrators.
Were they good to work with?
Oh, great. Yes. I've gone on and recommended them multiple times to other people looking for illustrators. Yeah, I've no complaints with either of them.
Here's a random question. Did you make a conscious decision to self-publish, or were you trying to get traditionally published for years and years and years, gave up, and then thought, I'm going to do this myself?
Kind of neither. Interesting just how it happened. Like, I started thinking, maybe I want to write a book. And an ad popped up on, you know, Facebook, because that's what happens when you think of something. And it was for like a self-publishing company, but not like do it yourself, like do it for you, but just, hey, we'll help you through it. So I reached out to them, and they didn't do children's books. So they referred me to another group. And so it just kind of, I started working with this other group, seeing what they had to offer. and took their class basically. And so it just kind of like fell into my lap. Like I honestly didn't even know self-publishing was a thing until like I started talking to this, and it was just the route that worked out for me. Like I never looked at traditionally published. It was just like, oh, I can find my own illustrator. And I don't even think I like knew it was self-publishing, like it was a real thing, until I was like partway through doing my book. And it was like, whoa, there's like two different types of publishing. I hadn't looked into it that much. It was just, hey, these guys will help me publish. And then I realized, oh, I'm like self-publishing. Like there's a difference here. And it worked out. I've enjoyed it. Like I wouldn't go back and change it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love, again, giving both perspectives of the trad and the, and well, it's not technically self-published, is it? It's independently published because you didn't do everything yourself. You are the publisher, right? So you hired the illustrator and hired the, so, you know, you're the creative director, the writer, the admin person. You're all the things, all the hats. Fantastic. So would you ever consider being trad published? Here's a random question.
Potentially. I do like having a lot of flexibility, which I've heard you have less being traditionally published, but I could also just kind of let other people do some of the work too. Like take some off my plate, you know, especially like as my kids get a little older and I don't have the evenings to myself anymore and I'm running them to soccer games and things, like, yeah, I'll let someone else step in and help me out.
Yeah. So going back to your initial introduction and showing us the books, you work as a recreational therapist. Tell me a little bit about what that job is. What does it involve?
Kind of another just opportunity that fell into my lap. I didn't really know what it was. One of my friends, I was struggling deciding on a major in college, and one of my friends was like, hey, you should do recreation management, because I had a friend do that and they just played all the time. And I was like, I'm in. I like playing. I like easy classes. And so I started taking these classes, and one of the teachers in that major was a recreational therapist. And so she was kind of advocating for, hey, emphasizing this. And I was like, well, that sounds like something I'd like to do. And so basically it's just, you take these recreational tools that you learn, but you help people apply them to like reach goals in their life. So I work mainly with people with disabilities, but I know a lot of people would work in like nursing homes or things like that. And they create goals to help each individual, whatever they need to be working on, and then find a recreational activity that helps meet that goal. So if it's a social activity, we're going to the park today. And, you know, if it was a kid I was working with autism, if he needed, you know, to be more social, we'd go to the park and his goal would be to reach out to one kid or, you know, even just play in a near vicinity, depending on where he was as one kid or, you know, things like that, where we see what the kid needs and we work with the parents and sometimes with physical therapists or occupational therapists and come up with a goal. And then we each kind of do our own thing to help that client reach his goal. And so with it being recreational therapy, it was always what fun can we have while still reaching a goal? And I enjoyed it, helping people, but having fun along the way.
Yeah, that's an amazing job. I've not actually heard of it until I saw it on your
oh, really?
On your bio. I thought, recreational therapist. That actually sounds fun. I love that you say these things just fall into your lap.
They do.
As a recreational therapist, do you find like that your clients, if that's what you call them, or your patients, I'm not sure the right terminology there, that you watch them, are they in a space where they're a little bit almost against the flow because of some challenge they're having? And it's almost like your job, and I think this is also your job as an author, so it is relevant, that you're kind of the person who comes and kind of puts them back in.
Yes, and I think honestly it depends on the person and just kind of their personality and their own mindset. You know, the people, some of them, they've been doing these programs for longer and they've seen the benefits from them and they're in. And other people, like, they're coming begrudgingly to the program, like, this isn't going to help me. And, you know, they're there at the beginning. And, you know, so it really, I think, just more depends on the person. I mean, isn't that how it is just in life? You know, there's some of us that we're more willing to jump into things and some of us that hold back a lot more and, I don't know if I want to do this, and go begrudgingly.
Yeah, but you're that person that has to, like, get them there in the end.
Yes. Yeah, it helps that usually I was never working alone. I had other people on the team that would also be doing it.
Amazing. And what I love is that you said, you know, the people, like as you were talking through the books, you pointed out the characters and how they were based on, you know, people that you know, and that you've actually gone out of your way to represent a wide variety of people that you either personally know or worked with or have seen the challenges with. And, you know, your excitement when you said, you know, like she got so excited she saw herself in a book, you know, like yes. That's fantastic.
You know, I gave her a copy. I don't think she even knew that I was writing the book about her, or not really about her, but the character is based off of her. And as soon as she saw it, like, she was so, so excited. I gave her a copy and probably still like her favorite book. And it makes me happy when other people see themselves in books and that they can relate.
Absolutely, because they might not have opportunities to see themselves in book if someone like you didn't go out of your way to represent them. So it's actually pretty profound, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're putting them in everyday life too, so you're not kind of making it about them having that thing, you know, like I'm using all the wrong words as I have a tendency to do, but, you know, it's not about their disability or their skin color or any of those things. It's more to do with them living everyday life as any other person in the world on the pages of a book, which is, I think sometimes, you know, like that in itself is magic.
Yes. And that was kind of my aim. Like I didn't want to sit and talk about, oh, well, she can't hear the cars driving by. And,
right.
You know, like I wanted it. They're normal. They're just like us. They, you know, like you have a different hair color than I have, and that's okay. Their ears work and our ears work and theirs don't. And that's okay. Like, but they can still go through every day enjoying spring or enjoying summer. Like they're not limited because they're a little bit different than the average person, you know? And so,
right.
Yeah, there aren't lines in there talking about their disabilities and how, you know, the kid's making cookies, but he has a prosthetic hand that's, you know, like it's just, no, he's just doing it. He's learned how to do it and he does it. And it's good. It's fine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah. Again, because I think of your, you know, amazing personal experience as a recreational therapist, you bring that love and kindness into your books. And, you know, I'm trying to make the point that really each of us is bringing who we are into our books. And it's amazing that you're doing that. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, other kids, everyday kids, can also learn from seeing characters like that in there and being like, oh, okay, that's normal. Nothing different about it. Like, it's fantastic. Yeah. We're all very different, but the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know I've done a couple like school visits and I've read the Seasons books. And so it's one thing that I just point out, like, look how she's in a wheelchair and yet she can still go on a boat and she can still skip rocks. Like, isn't it so cool that she can still do the same things that we do, even though she's in a wheelchair? Just, you know, they're always like kindergarten or first graders, but trying even at that young age just to say, hey, they might look a little different or have something that's different, but doesn't really make them different. Like, we're all so different in our own way that it's fine, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And super empowering. So there's like this theme of empowerment coming through all of your books. It's probably part of your brand, even if you haven't identified that. Maybe I'm helping you identify it on air.
I like it.
Yeah, yeah. And even I love the first book, as you talked about it. It was so clever. It was like the mum thinking of, you know, what job could my daughter do? But in the end, it was like, it doesn't actually, that's okay. She's just my daughter now. I reckon we all do that as parents. Like, you know I definitely do. And it's like a beautiful read for the parent, not just, it changes the parent, not just changes the child as they read that picture book.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times, you know, it's, oh, wow, my son's really good at math. I wonder if he's going to be an engineer like his dad when he grows up. But it's like, why does it matter? Like, we're never going to guess. I mean, maybe we will guess, but that's just luck. And let him grow up. Let him, you know, focus that he's a kid now. We don't need to shove all these math facts down his throat when he's 4 years old. He's going to learn, and it's going to be fine. And he'll choose what he wants to be when he grows up, and that's fine. Like, you know, let's focus on the fun we can have at the stage they're in now and stop trying to jump and plan ahead.
I had this mother one time years and years ago, I think when my son, who's now 19, was maybe, I think it was prep, and she said, you know, she was talking about her son, and she said, oh, you know, it's not like he's ever going to be a doctor. And I was like, well, he might. And she said, no, he's not smart enough for that. And I thought, oh, you know, sort of the opposite way, you know, like we all sort of go, my son's going to grow up and become something. He's six, right? Like, A, what does it matter what job he becomes? Like today, he's just started prep. We call prep, I think we call prep what you guys call kindergarten.
Sounds
so like
about
the first year. Yeah, just for, because I know we have a few little differences there. So prep is like the first year of school, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, kindergarten, correct? Yeah. So, but anyways, it's that thing, isn't it, as parents. So, you know, like really kind of amazing themes. And I'm going on about your themes, but I feel like themes are, I think, quite important in picture books, though there are many people who think there should be no themes in picture books. And I hear that a lot from my people that I interview. Forget about themes. Stop trying to be a mom. And just, you know, write something silly and fun for the child. But I like to think that there's a lot of space and there's a lot of customers out there. There's a lot of reading customers out there. And the mums do look for those books. I know I looked for those books. And those books didn't exist. Hence now self-publishing people are now filling these gaps and doing very well filling these gaps. So it is a thing. I'm yelling at you, listener.
Yes. You know, and I think there's just a fine line. Like, you've got to have it silly and fun and entertaining for the kids, or they're not going to want to read it. But, like, if it's all just, like, silly and fun, then I also think, like, parents kind of get bored with that. And so you've got to have the theme in there. Even if it's something as subtle as there's just a picture and he has a prosthetic hand. Like, I mean, it's not like all the words go through and say that, but it's still there. And so if the mom wants to bring it up or the dad wants to bring it up and talk about it, like, they can, but it's not like shoving it down your throat and, you know, forcing it into the book that you have to talk about it. Just if you want to, it's there. And if you don't, well, you don't have to.
Beautifully said. And let's talk about how to actually make it a rhyming book. Now, again, there's a lot of negativity about rhyming books. Like I went to an event and they're like, don't write writing books. We don't like, it was a trad publishing event. We don't like writing books because I think it's to do with, if you're a publisher out there, you may write to me and correct me if I am wrong, but I think it's to do with the fact that they can't sell translation rights as easily in a rhyming book. But having said that, I have heard of rhyming books, trad published rhyming books that have been sold translation rights, and the translators just translate them, and they don't necessarily have to be rhyming books when they're translated. But there is still, I'm going to yell it down the microphone so you hear me and tell me if I'm right or wrong, Essie. You are my backup person. Or tell me okay. if I'm wrong, you tell me. There is still a huge demand and love of rhyming books. They are wonderful. Parents love them. They are definitely a thing. So if you want to write a rhyming book and that's your speciality, you can. If you want to write a themed book, you can. You can do anything you want to do if it's your flow. There's a theme coming through here. If it's your flow and you can be successful with it, you just have to find your readers. That's me getting off my podium now and giving the microphone back to you, Shannon. I'm gone, Shannon, now, because now we're going to talk to Shannon about Essie. How do we write a rhyming book that works?
I've always liked or preferred reading rhyming books and books with meter. Like, as the reader reading it out loud, like, it's just, I think it's more fun. And so I knew when I started writing, that's what I wanted to do. And like you said, like, there was pushback. Like, it's too hard to get the meter down. It's too hard to get the rhyme. And like, if you don't get the rhyme just perfect, like, people aren't going to like it. And, you know, there's a couple of times that I have like rocks and walk, like there's an S. Like, it's not always perfect, but, you know, it works well enough. But it was like, this is what I like doing. This is what I like reading. And so it's what I'm going to write. I'm not going to write a book that I wouldn't myself want to read. And so at first I honestly didn't know what I was doing. So with Paul the Penguin, because that was the first one that I had like edited, I wrote it all out and the syllables for each line, you know, to try and get the meter, they were spot on. Like, I don't know, 15 syllables every line and they all rhymed. It was like, this is perfect. Like, I've done it. This isn't so hard. And I send it to my editor and she writes back. She's like, we got the rhyming and the syllables are good, but it doesn't flow when you read it because, you know, there's all the different emphasis that you put on words. And so if you don't put the emphasis in the right place, it doesn't flow. So even though I got the right syllables, like my book was a mess. So luckily, like my editor knew that and she helped me through it. And, you know, by the time I got to the last book, I understood, you know, I've done 6 books now and I understood how to do it. But it really was finding the right amount of syllables and putting the emphasis in the right place. And sometimes you've got to word things slightly different or change just the order of the words. Find a new word so that you have the right amount of syllables with the right emphasis in the right place, and they all rhyme at the end. So there's a lot that goes into it, which does make it hard. And like you said, the translation is also hard if you want to keep it that way. If my books ever got translated, I don't know if I'd force the meter and the rhyme and all of that, because it is hard. Like, it was hard to do it the first time. So then to take someone else's work, put it in a new language, and also keep that with like not changing the book, I think would be very difficult. So if someone could do that, like, good for you. But I think I would be okay with it. Just translate it and make it follow the book as closely as possible.
Yeah, but you're right, because it's got to follow that. Is it like a musical cadence?
Yeah.
And it's really good that you're educating us that, you know, it is, like you said, you felt great. You're like, man, my rhymes are down. Like, I am brilliant. And then you sent it to the editor. the big bad editor. Thank goodness for editors. I always say when I'm around kids who go like, wow, you can write. I'm like, no, I can think up the ideas and put them down. But the editor's the one who's really writing. They're the ones that clean it up.
He helped me rewrite many lines. It's like, it was not how I worded it at all, but it's like, that sounds way better. Like, I could not. There were even just times where it's like, hey, I know you're going to edit this book because you've done my others. And I was so stuck on a line. And it's like, I don't know what to put here. Can you help me? And like, she'd come up with a line for me because I couldn't do it, you know, as much as I tried. Like, yeah, she saved me with these books for sure.
So it's important then to find an editor who can edit like that, with particularly rhyming picture books. They are specialist kind of editors who
they are, yeah,
are better at it than, say, an editor who doesn't edit things like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know when I put, like, I found her on Upwork online as well. And when I put it out there, it's like, I need an editor who is very familiar with children's books, like specifically children's books, but also one that knows meter and rhyme and can help with that. Because, I mean, I could get an editor that does adult nonfiction books, but it's so different than children fiction books. And, you know, and so it's so specialized. You've got to find the right editor for exactly what you're wanting.
Having said that, there are some rhyming books out there, some that I can think of who have even, like, you know, got New York Times bestseller. And when I read them, the rhyme, the cadence and the things all off, but they've got a really good concept. And I'm like, it amazes me how, you know, there's all these rules and make sure you do everything perfectly and everything has to be done right. And then there's also people that completely break the rules and still become massive successes.
Books I struggle writing, like, or reading. It's like, this is a great book, but I can't keep my beat down as I'm reading this. Like, that just annoys me, and I don't even read it. But there's, you know, it's a New York Times bestseller. Like, there's so many people that don't care. Like, good for you. If you want to break the rules and do it your way, you're doing great. So keep at it.
I'm curious, do you like drive in the car sometimes and everything comes to you in rhymes now? You're like, rhyme, rhyme, rhyme. You know, like, everything, you're sort of always thinking of rhymes.
Honestly, I've kind of been that way forever, which is another reason that like rhyming books came to me. But like, I make up words to songs like all the time. Like, I use some tune I know and I'm just like singing to my kids, and it's always, I've got to rhyme the words in the song. Like, it just, I don't know. That's how my brain is wired, is things rhyme a lot. So writing rhyming books made sense to me because I did that all the time in my daily life.
Yeah, but it is like songwriting. I had another author tell me writing picture books is very similar to writing songs.
I can believe it.
Yeah, hence why I don't think I'd ever attempt one. We'll see. There is a book I want to write, which is kind of like I think it might be a picture book. I'm not sure, because it's not really for little kids. It's kind of for older kids, but it's called something like, I can't remember the exact title, but it's called something like, don't steal this idea if you're listening to my podcast. But if you do, good luck. There's a lot of space for all of us. It's called something like Rhett Oracles, Cling Clinging Super Duper Slip Into World, something like this. The title's better than that, but Rhett Oracle is rhetorical devices. And it's so everybody's got a name and their characters in a book to teach sort of more older kids rhetorical advices, and actually to teach authors rhetorical devices, because I never knew them for the longest time and thought, how do some people write their books so well? And then when I discovered them, I was like, oh my gosh, I can actually sound good on the page. I didn't know there were these things. So I kind of think if I have a little picture book, I can flick it. But it's overwhelming. I'm like, how does one write a picture book? So did you follow the 32-page kind of rule of picture books, or did you just go, I'm going to do whatever, how it comes, how it lands, I'm going to do whatever feels good?
So I didn't have a clue what I was doing with my first book. So I think my first book is maybe 28 pages, because I didn't realize, like, I knew, okay, the printing press likes it to be divisible by 4. And if you don't do that, then you're going to have extra pages at the end of your book. And I don't want that. So, hey, 28. Like, it's just kind of how my story naturally fell apart. And after I did that one, learning more, it was like, oh, people like 32 pages. Okay, my next books can be that. So that's what I did for my other 5. But my first one, Paul the Penguin, is not that, because I didn't know what I was doing. But, like, I don't think there's been one person that's ever come to me and been, your book isn't 32 pages. Like, you messed up. Like, nobody, I've never counted pages in a book when I've read it. I have no idea. So I don't think that is something people need to follow.
Yeah, it's more, I think, like you said, because trad publishers print them en masse, and like their costs change if they alter that page layout. I think it's more a financial decision than it is mum at home reading the book to a child thinking, did it finish early, or why is this book continuing on past page 32?
Yes.
No. How do you, I noticed, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I noticed when I went on your website that like the books were like $10 each or something. And I'm like, how does she sell those books for so cheap? How does she, go and buy some people, there's like, that's so cheap. Not cheap as in not good cheap, like the word cheap where you use it. Cheap as in affordable, affordable picture books. How did you make that happen?
I think they are, because I feel like there's so many like traditionally published books that they're more than $10 each. It's like, my books are expensive. So I'm glad that you don't think that they are. So I print all my paperback through Amazon publishing company, KDP. And so I just have to pay for the printing cost, because I can buy a bunch of author copies. So I do it that way, and then I store them at my house. They're all sitting right next to me on a desk. And then U.S. has, I'm blanking the name, Media Mail. And so if you're shipping books, you can just say, hey, it's just books in here, and they ship it Media Mail, and I can put 10 books in a package, and the price doesn't change. And so then it makes it really affordable to ship as well. And so, yeah, just between not having to pay royalties, because I'm selling it from my house and not like on some website, well, my own website, but, you know, and then through the Media Mail, it helps.
That's so cool. Every episode lately I've been turning green with envy, because one of my book characters turns green with envy, and they're like, I'm starting to tinge. That's so cool that you get to do that, because postage in Australia is, am I allowed to say, expensive. And actually, I absorb the cost by doing free postage on everything and reabsorb it back in. But, it's like everything's so much more expensive here. Like what would be a $10 book in the US here would be like, you know, $15, $16, $17, you know, which is a lot, almost double the cost. And, you know, I thought we're supposed to be encouraging kids to be reading, but it's kind of like,
But if you can't be affording the books, then it makes it hard to read.
Yeah. So it's really great to see that. And you know, a lot of my listeners are American. So, you know, if you are in the US, like, go and write your own book. It's even cheaper than doing it than if you're in Australia, because, you know, it's fantastic that the printing can be kept so low and customers can access your books in the same sort of way that they can a trad-published book, which comes out en masse, you know, and it's the postage is so cheap. So it's probably then more about discoverability online, hey? But you do vendor event, like you go to, what do you go to, markets or things? Like, talk to me a bit about that.
Yeah, markets. I'm part of a Facebook group that's just vendor events in Utah, which is, you know, where I'm at. And when I see one that seems like it caters to families and to kids, then I sign up and I take my books, and I've got this big poster that says Meet the Author, which has got so many people to stop, because at first they're like, oh, books, whatever. And then they look and they're like, you're the author. Oh, let me talk to you. And, you know, it encourages more people to stop and say hi. And even people have just asked questions about publishing, and then they end up buying a book or, you know. But yeah, I take my books and I have a free raffle every time, like, hey, win a book if you, you know, if you throw your name in. And that just ways to draw people into the booth. And then I get talking to them. And yeah, so it's been fun. A great way to meet people. And I've set up readings through schools and libraries that way, get my name out there so people, more people know who I am.
And do you find that when you're there in person with your books, you know, in front of you and actual real customers interacting, you start to see which of the books that they gravitate to more?
Yes.
And you think, really, is that the one that they like? You know, do you find that?
Yes. And it's funny because every event I've done, it's like a different book. Like some events, it's always Possibilities of You. And other events, it's the winter book, Cold Noses. Like it just, it's funny, but there's always like one book that takes it away at an event, but it changes every event, which book it is.
That's so intriguing. So it can make a difference because there's different people at the different events.
Yeah. Or the time of year, maybe, like, I don't know what it is, but.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the weather like where you are? Utah, right? So is it like, is it summer all year round, or is there winter? Like,
yeah. We have all four seasons. So we're just coming into summer. Winter was long. It was like the longest winter. I've lived here basically my whole life, and longest winter we've ever had. I mean, it's probably 6 months. But it's spring right now. It's been pleasant and the like perfect weather to be outside and eating a popsicle right now. Not too hot. And we're getting into summer. It's going to start getting hotter. And
yeah. So do you do events like all year round, or is it just particular times of the year?
Yeah, just whenever there's ones that look good to me. So I've done some indoor during the winter and some outdoor, and just, yeah.
And they're definitely worth doing, huh? So you keep them as part of your strategy?
For now, yeah. I mean, I know other authors who they can sell more books doing ads online each day than they can at an event. So they're like, it's not worth my time. But for me, I'm not there yet. And so I sell a decent amount at these events. So it's like, sure, I'll go. And, you know, just starting out, it's a great way to get my name out there. And so I find it very worth my time.
Yeah, definitely. And as you say, like, it gets your face out there, mm-hmm. not just your name out there.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think we can forget about getting our faces out mm-hmm. there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we become just a name, you know, that sort of floats on books, which is fantastic. But there's nothing still, I think, we are humans, and there's nothing like meeting other humans in person. And I forget sometimes that markets and things are a great way to do that, and maybe not sustainable super long term, but definitely worthwhile doing initially.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's like, how long till I keep going to this event that everyone there is going to know who I am and have bought the books that want books, and I'm not going to be selling anymore. But initially, yeah, it's been great. So I'm going to keep doing them.
Yeah, and you know you're on track with what you've written, as I say, because people, you know, don't look at them and go, interesting concept, and walk along. They actually buy them.
Yeah, and I've had, like, you know, sold some at this vendor booth, your event, and then another event comes up and they'll come back and be like, I want you to know, like, we are still reading your books. We still are loving your books. Like, you know, thanks for writing them. Thanks for selling them. And it, that makes me happy. It's like, oh, they remember me and they like my books and I'm doing something that at least they're pretending to like enough to come and tell me. So yeah, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Enjoy
talking with people. I don't think they would be pretending.
Probably not if they're going to make the effort to come over, but there's imposter syndrome. So.
Of course. And then, of course, you know, you're probably doing events in Utah, but you probably wonder, like, how do they translate in other states? Would they be, you know, just as popular or do they want different topics? But, I mean, you know, something especially like, say, the Four Seasons book, you can't go wrong with that. All of humanity needs those books, really, right. In every country.
Yeah. It's true.
Really great concept.
Yeah, they're not too specialized or specific.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we can underestimate something as simple as the weather because, you know, what do we do? We go out and we're like, hi, how are you? Good. Yeah, good weather we're having. Like the weather rules our lives, and I think we can think it's not a very important topic, but actually it does rule our lives at the end of the day. And to children, I think my kids would get up and be like, is it hot or cold today? What are we doing? Are we swimming or are we, you know, like it rules their day. It's a really big part of who they are.
I don't know how many times my son walks in my room in the morning. Mom, is it going to be warm today? Can I wear shorts? Like it is the first thing on his mind. What can he wear today based on the weather?
Do you find kids respond to that topic like really well?
I think so. I think because it just like shows fun activities. They enjoy it. But I think really what a lot of them are drawn into are the different animals that they find on each page. I think it's just because it's like a search and find, you know, what's the chicken doing on this page? What, you know, where's the dog hiding here? And so almost more than the weather, that they have something to look for is what keeps them engaged throughout the book.
That's a really good tip. So having this kind of little side action happening in the illustrations that may not exactly be the story, but makes the illustration add to the story.
Yeah, illustrations are so important that way to add to the story and expand beyond the words.
Have you done any school visits? It's a very hot topic on this podcast because I'm scared to do them. Everyone knows. See, part of the problem I have is I feel like you've got, for example, such a clear agenda of who you are and what you'd go in to do for a school visit. Though I will ask you, of course, that's the question, but I don't feel like I have that. So I'm not sure how I go in. Do I go in like an entertaining author? Do I go in like I'm teaching you how to write author? Do I go in about the topics of the books kind of author? So how do you do it?
So everyone that I've done have been like 5-6 year olds, like really young. So it's very much entertaining. We're reading the books, you know, depending on the amount of time I have, maybe I'll explain what an author is and what an illustrator is. Sometimes we just read the book. But yeah, it's for me, because my audience is so young, I've got to entertain them in order to keep them engaged and not, you know, pulling the person next to them hair, or, you know, whatever it is. And so, yes, I take my books, or I've even done like my books on a PowerPoint to make it big. Everyone can see it. And then I'll ask questions throughout, like, oh, what is your favorite season? And, you know, do you think the chicken's being funny here, laying his egg on top of leaves or whatever it is, you know, like just kind of doing my best to keep them engaged and meet their age.
And how has it gone? Has it always been successful, or have you had times where you've gone,
For the most part, it's gone really well. Like the kids have always been super just fun. And I walk away liking my books more, like, yeah, kids actually like my books. Like it's such a boost for me, because I don't know, at that age, like I've never got too much pushback from them. There's one that said I needed to add a little more action to my penguin book and that I should throw a shark in there. It's like, well, not really the point of the book, but they, you know, but so it's such a funny suggestion. Like nothing, wow, your book really was awful. I didn't like it. Like, you know, it's just a funny suggestion. He wanted a shark to be chasing the penguin. But yeah, they've done well. The kids have seemed to like it. So that I walk away thinking my books are just great. Kids love them. And so then I want to sign up for more school visits.
Yeah, fantastic. And you, and again, I am learning, I am taking notes, interact more with your audience. Yes, so, you know, get out from behind your office computer, whatever, and get out there and meet your readers somewhere, somehow, because their feedback can really help even with the next book that you're writing. So what's the plan with your, do you have a plan? What's the plan? Is it like keep writing more books? What I'm thinking about is if you're trad published, for example, you know, like your book is out there and it's out there for a certain period of time and then it goes away. I think unless there's like massive sales, it eventually kind of goes away. So then, you know, you write the next thing. And I know one of the things we say is that you, you know, have to pick something that you can always create new content in. But maybe with self-published books, you don't. And why do I say that? Because actually there is nothing wrong with, this is a strategy I think that maybe we don't talk about. And of course I'm having this conversation with you today, Shannon, and, you know, we're thinking about it, you know, is there would be nothing wrong with you saying, these are my six books. I'm not going to write any other books ever. And I'm going to spend the next 20 years like full on promoting these books. There's a big world audience out there. So, you know, you can never stop having, that could be a thing. So you don't necessarily have to always be writing new books. If you wrote one fantastic series at, or concept, you could actually keep promoting that concept and getting a wider and wider audience, right? I think sometimes we don't think of that as an option. We're always thinking about the next thing we create. But sometimes when we create the next thing, we almost as like trad publishers, we shelve our other work and then it gets a bit stale because we've shelved it because we're all about the new series we're writing. So how do you think of, what do you think about what I just said and how that relates back to you? What's your opinion on it all?
All makes sense. I love writing. Like that is very much what I find the joy in. And then seeing the illustrations come and like the book coming together and like, wow, my words are in a book. And that is what relieves me a lot of joy. So I see myself continuing writing. I mean, the last book came out August or September. So it's been a couple of months and I'm not working on anything currently because I feel a little guilty, like I got to get some of my money back, you know, like I put the money in for the illustrations and the editor and stuff. And so I'm currently working on just marketing and getting my book out there. But like, if I can get it out there a little more, then I would love to keep writing just because that's where I find the joy. That's, you know, where my sanity comes in the evening when kids go to bed is I've got something I'm working towards. So I think personally for me, it's, you know, the whole reason I started doing it was just, it's kind of a hobby to give me something that was for me, that wasn't just my mom role. Like I had something else that I was working towards. And so, you know, even if it means these books maybe get a little stale because I'm working on the next thing, if it's a sanity boost for me, then I'm going to keep writing new things.
So you're a writer at heart.
I think so.
Yeah, and I'm really glad I asked you that and just sort of brought up that topic because I think a lot of people are writers at heart, and because they don't necessarily have a platform to publish any other way now, you know, doing it, quote, yourself has become a really viable option. And it's fantastic that you can, you know, continue to add to your brand and bring out, you know, a lot more things and know that you don't have to be in a rush either because you've also got those other books that are already there. So balancing it with your family. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big push to get six books out in 18 months. I mean, it was every like 3 months I've got another one out. So as I'm, you know, finishing up one book, I'm writing the next book and it was draining. Like I was burnt out by the end. But, you know, so if I continue doing it in the future, I would not bring them out at such a rapid pace. But it was kind of like the first three I had written. So the winter one, Apollo Penguin Possibility, I had all of them written before I started publishing them. And so the winter one came out and it's like, I need to finish the seasons. Like, I can't just have one season. And so then the others I had to, like, push to get through, because it's like, let's get these out, like, each new season instead of waiting, like, a whole year till the next season comes. But, yeah, I think if I continue, hopefully, when I continue writing, that, you know, maybe one or two a year is more the pace that I'll fall into.
Yeah, there can be a bit of a, I feel like it's a little bit of a myth, because we watch the adult self-published authors talk about speed and get your books out and feed the algorithms. And I don't think that's as true for children's books. Although I'm sure it's fantastic when you go to, you know, your markets and things to have all those seasons there now, and it was worth that initial push. I think you probably can do it at a much more balanced pace that still grows your business a little at a time, keeps your sanity, stops you from burning out, and has you enjoying, you know, being a mum, because that's, I don't know, I think that's number one. But you may think your business is number one. I should not assume that.
No, I agree.
And, of course, our husbands, we mustn't forget them. They are somewhere in the picture.
You're watching the kids right now, supporting me as I do this.
We often leave them out. Not all of us. Some people are single parents. But for those of us that do have husbands, well, I think they should get a mention.
It's true. My first book was dedicated to him. So there's his mention.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And often they're the ones that fund our initial books.
Yes, that is also true.
Thanks for the money, honey. There we are. Exactly. But then, you know, that's the aim. We're building up and building up our own businesses. And I think it's fantastic now. There's so many mums can actually create a business through self-publishing while raising their kids, having the best fun time doing it, working with all these incredible people, meeting other people like through podcasts like we are doing.
Yeah.
It's a really great time to be a writer.
It is. Yeah. And like, because of the technology and like being able to self-publish, you do it on your own time frame, your own schedule. Like, you don't have to, hey, the publisher needs my changes and my edits by this day, and so I've got to spend all day doing it. Like, you do it when you want and when it's convenient for you. And so, yeah, it's great as a mom. Like, if I can't do it today because we've got, you know, swim practice or whatever we're going to, that's fine. Like, no one is hounding me to get it done. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it when I have the time. Like, I set my own schedule and my own deadlines. And if I don't meet it, I revise, I change my schedule, you know. It works out great.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being on the show and talking to me all about rhyming picture books, family life, why we do what we do, being in the flow. Gosh, we've covered so many diverse topics. And, of course, all the diverse people that we're got the responsibility of representing at times, and it sounds like you're doing that so beautifully. I bet the people in your life are so, so just overwhelmed that you have, you know, created books for them to read, and for them being in there. It's amazing.
I sure hope so.
It's part of your legacy. They'll be around forever. Well, isn't it like 75 years? After you die, even though you're not dying anytime soon. But I knocked on wood because I'm Greek and very superstitious. That's why I was doing, like, if you hear that in the, that's me knocking. So thank you so much again for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it. Like, this has been good.
And all the links to Essiebel will be in the show notes. So go and check them out, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Did you find that interview valuable? Great! Now be an awesome human and go and leave a review, because it helps the podcast out so much. Want to read the show notes? Check out thechildrensbookauthorpodcast.com. Want to find out more about me, Eleanor Page? Find me at eleanorpage.com, or come and say hello on social at Eleanor Page Books. Until next time, keep writing and keep learning.